This is one in a series of podcasts from Lutheran Education Australia, My Principals Who Serve in Lutheran Education. Today we are talking to Don Walkley. Don has been principal of three schools and is currently principal at St Paul's, a secondary boarding and day school in Walla Walla. Don also spent 10 years as a school governance consultant, which included governance work and research in 12 different countries. He has also published Guiding Standards for Governing by School Boards. It's no surprise then that Don will be talking with us about school governance. Welcome, Don.
Thanks, Di.
Don, firstly, how would you define governance from a school perspective?
Di, I think the word governance is potentially misused unintentionally by a lot of people. The word governance refers to the structure of decision-making in an organisation. For instance, for St Paul's, the structure of decision-making, who makes decisions for St Paul's? New South Wales District Church. Lutheran Education, Victoria, New South Wales and Tasmania. My college board and myself. So there's four key players, people who are responsible to make decisions for the college. So that's the structure. The word that I think is missing in our vocabulary around this, in this space, is the word governing. And that refers to the processes of decision making. How does the board make its decisions? How does the principal make his or her decisions? How does the New South Wales District Church Council make its decisions? So governance refers to the structure, who is making decisions for the school, and the word governing, how are we doing that? Wrapped around that are three essential, almost critical success factors, and I put the words stewardship, partnership, and relationship in front of you, because all those that are involved in the decision-making processes must be aware that we are stewards of St Paul's for a period of time, meaning we have responsibility to not only to, not to mind the museum, but to ensure that at the end of our tenure, we have enabled the school to grow and prosper. That's the language of stewardship. Partnership. Again, going back to St Paul's, we have New South Wales District Council, LEVNT, College Board, and myself as principal. We must make every possible effort to work in partnership, in collaboration together. And finally, the quality of our relationships between those four entities is crucial. The bottom line, the watermark for all of this, are our students. We owe it to our students, all those in that governance structure, and all those who are engaged in the processes and the art of governing have a responsibility, in my view, to ensure that we have good quality relationships, good quality partnerships, and that we are being true to the stewardship that we've been entrusted with.
Yes, Don, it's important to get that language right when you're talking about governing and governance. Correct. Are there other words or phrases that you think are significant?
Oh, yes, absolutely. So we've mentioned the word governing. As principal of the school, in partnership with the board, I am engaged in the processes of governing the school. The board wears one hat. They're involved in the processes of governing the school. I wear two hats. Yes, in partnership with the board, in collaboration with the board, I am governing with them, but my other hat is I'm managing the school. That's the point of difference. Governing is about big picture, and we'll talk about that later, is about the big picture, the sustainability of the school. Managing is to do with the operational side of the school. The board does not, its responsibility is not the day-to-day. I do that, and I do that in partnership with my executive and the staff. So the words governing and managing, there needs to be a separation and understanding of that as well. The other key word that I'd mention, or two actually, the understanding of strategy is a bit confusing in the boards that I've worked with all over the place over the last period of time. Strategic priorities is a process for any governing body to discern what will be our priorities for the next period of time. Some do it for 3 years, and sorry, create priorities for 3 years. Some may do it for 5 years. That's up to the board to decide. But the board decides these will be our priorities for the next period of time to ensure the college continues to grow and prosper. Board makes that decision, then says to the principal, now, Don, go away and create a plan of action. So the strategic priorities sit with the board. Strategic plan sits with the principal and the executive of the school. Subsequently, the principal must report back on a periodical basis to the board to reassure them that I am enacting their decision on the priorities. So strategic priorities and strategic plan are two different processes and have two, and there are different bodies responsible for them. The other point of clarification I put in with this right language context is policy and procedure. Mm-hmm. The board approves all policies of the school. It's critical. A policy is a legal document. I am not the legal entity of the school. Here at St. Paul's, our college board is a legal entity. Now, I recognise this is just our story. Across Australia, there's a whole range of governance structures and legal frameworks for school boards. That has to be clarified. The board here at St. Paul's is a legal entity. It has authority to approve policies. My role then is to go away and put together procedures. Okay? So the board approves a policy. I then must go and create procedures to implement that policy. Yes, so that's just a couple of points of difference: governing and managing, strategic priorities and strategic plan, policy and procedure. It's terribly important we understand who's responsible for what and who is accountable for what. There's accountability in here too. Sure.
So essentially the school is providing the overall arching direction. Sorry, the board is providing the overarching direction for the school.
Yes.
And you are putting that into operation.
Correct.
Putting that into practice.
Perfect.
Yeah. So you mentioned that as principal you would report to the board. What would your principal's report typically look like?
Okay. I'm accountable to the board, and as one aspect of that board report is the strategic priorities. So in each of my board report is shaped around the strategy, the strategic priorities of the board, reporting on how I'm implementing that. Secondly, the second area of my report is around policy. So I'm putting forward policies for approval. And in doing so, putting that policy for approval, I'm giving background context as to what's happened, what changes have occurred in this policy. For instance, every year in New South Wales, there's updates to the child protection policy. Yes. So every year I represent that to the board for their approval, and I highlight what changes there have been in legislation that have caused this to occur. The third aspect of my report is around risk. Any perceived or real risk to the school must be reported to the board. They are responsible. They need to know. Sometimes, depending on an incident or an issue, I will phone the board chair immediately so there's no surprises. If I perceive there's any risk to the school or to the safety and well-being of a student, staff member or parent, I will phone the board chair to give them the heads up, but then I subsequently report to the board. So my board report is shaped around accountability on implementing the strategic plan, putting forward policies for their approval, and informing the board and sometimes seeking their input around the aspect of risk. What I do on an annual basis also in this risk space, I ask the board to revisit our risk appetite statement. It's only a short statement, but essentially what I'm saying to the board every year, what will you not tolerate? For instance, and the reason I've done this, it's not common practice, but I'd like it. I think it should become common practice. Mm-hmm. In my work, engaging with school boards, some boards have decided they will not allow international excursions. This is pre-COVID, okay? They will not allow international study tours. Some will not even allow camps. What they're saying is our risk appetite doesn't go that far. We believe there's too many risks associated with those activities, so we will not allow that. And that's the context of risk appetite. What will you not tolerate? Quite clearly, as it should be, the board will say any action, words or action that threaten the identity, the Christian Lutheran identity of our school will not be tolerated. Mm-hmm. And what that says to me is, Don, if you come across any incident or action or words that are contrary to our Christian Lutheran ethos, we expect you to act upon that. You have our endorsement. So a risk appetite statement is only a short statement, but essentially what I'm asking the board is, I need some indication, the sense of appetite. What will you not tolerate? So that's essentially my report to the board, strategy, policy and risk. As a courtesy, I'll inform the board about any staffing changes. And, of course, we always continually talk about the development of the college, our facilities, and any capital works. That's part of the strategy component. We're constantly one element of our strategic priorities has always been since I've been here is to redevelop and refurbish the college. That's always on the agenda, and I'm always provoking the board to try and discern what's the next project and so on. So that's, in essence, my board report.
You mentioned a few risks there, Don, for example, travel, camps, the ethos of the school. Yeah. What would be some other risks that they would need to know about? Obviously, we've got things like if there's a critical incident, they need to be informed about that. But
yes, absolutely. So, well, this year, this tragic year with the pandemic, even in between board meetings, I wrote reports to the board to keep them informed about how I was managing the risks associated with the possible transmission of COVID within the school. My executive here at the school also serves as the critical incident response team. So we get regular updates from Independent Schools New South Wales. And any significant changes to that, I'll discuss it with our critical incident response team. But I'd also keep the board, and in fact, not just the board, but the bishop and the New South Wales District Church Council. They're the owners of the school. So I kept the bishop and the board fully informed about how I was managing the preventative measures and the directives from the Department of Education here in New South Wales and New South Wales Department of Health and the federal agencies. There's a lot of information coming in and had to be discerned and managed. So I kept the board appraised, not just at the board meetings, but I would send out always through the chair. And I guess that would be another suggestion in this space, that in between the board meetings, if I were to send information to the board, it can only be through the chair. The principal does not communicate, should not communicate to any board member unless the board chair is aware of that. So what I would do, if I were to send information between board meetings to all the board members, I'd ring the chair, we'd talk about the matter, and then I'd send my email, the subject matter title, the subject of the email is through the board chair. So I can only speak through the chair. I do not speak directly to the board. It's just a common courtesy, and it's understanding the difference between, they're my employer, and that's the protocol of communication.
sounds like a very good plan during a year where things changed very rapidly, lockdowns, opening back up again and so on. So that capacity to communicate via the chair was really quite critical.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. And again, sorry, that goes back to this the critical success factor I mentioned before. Your relationship with and partnership with the chair is essential in all of this, that we agree on our communication protocols, we're comfortable with them, and we respect them. So it's all based upon that and premised upon that as well.
Glad you've raised that importance of the relationship between the principal and the chair of the board. It's really critical to how you work together and how you work with the board. What about other things that might be important for you and the board, such as your role description, the constitution? Can you explore those ideas a bit further?
The delegations from the District Church Council to the board, the board's constitution, my position description, those three documents form part of the risk framework. Everything's okay when everything's okay. But when something goes wrong, who is accountable for what? Who is responsible for what? So, and subsequently from myself, when I'm, and I have created position descriptions for my executive team, and there's a general position description for teachers, but any non-teachers also need a position description. This is part of risk minimization, that people are very clear on what their responsibilities are and what they'll be held accountable for. So, as I said, the constitution of the board and my position description, it's very well, all the board members have my position description. They know what my role is and what I'm accountable for. But that sits and fits in the risk framework of the school. Every school, hopefully should have a risk framework, and those documents form part of the risk minimisation strategy.
What are the key areas that you as principal and the board work on together, and what does that look like in your experience?
This year, the key area has been the health and safety of our community. Mm-hmm. It's dominated. It's absolutely been front and centre of our the work that we've done at meetings and between meetings. And I've no doubt that will continue for another period of time, who knows. The second area, again, is to do with the redevelopment of the college. We've been blessed in the last 4 years. We've had some significant capital work projects, but there's more to do. I love spending other people's money. So I'm keen to find other sources of funds to keep that project going. So that's very much on the radar. They would probably be the two most dominant the third element there is policy, continuing to review policies, amend policies, adjust policies. That it's not the most attractive work that we do as principals. It's a bit of administrivia, yes it is, but the policy documentation is critical, absolutely critical. Again, everything's okay when everything's okay, but if something goes wrong, the question will be asked, what is the school's policy on this matter? So they're probably, the fourth area would be our connected community. We're in the process of revitalising and re-energising parent involvement in the school and the involvement of our old collegians. Mm-hmm. That we've been chipping away at that each year, and there's more to happen next year. So we're very sensitive and keen to explore. It's always on the radar, always on the radar.
John, you've had quite a passion for working with governance in schools. Yes. What sort of advice would you give to someone who's thinking, I might be interested in being a principal, but I'm really not sure how this governance thing works? What sort of advice would you give them?
Talk to your colleague principals. Every story is different, and what I do here at St. Paul's may not sit and fit with even in the Lutheran school context. Each school has a different culture and ethos. But talk to your principal colleagues. How does their story, what's their story look like? Talk to your regional director. either in Queensland or Victoria or South Australia. They may have resources, and there are resources around. The LEA website has resources.
Definitely do.
Which we put together some years ago. And I think they're very handy go-to guides. So there's stories out there, individual stories we can learn from. There are documents we can work with. But the most, the most critical factor here is your approach to this context and your relationship with your chair, your relationship with the board, your relationship with the owners of the school, that you're comfortable, that you feel safe to ask questions. I've had robust conversations with my board chair. We've named the issue. I feel safe to do that. I feel comfortable to do that. We both do, we name it as it is, but together we're working towards finding solutions. So it's really your approach to the board, and sometimes we have to be courageous to ask the questions. If there's a difficult conversation with your board chair or a board member, you may want to seek the counsel of your colleague principals or staff in the regional or national offices. So the critical factor for new principals coming into this space, can I throw in another suggestion? I'd like to advocate that deputy principals come into the governing space on a more formal arrangement. My view is that our deputy principals are potentially our future principals. Yes. So could we consider our deputy principals becoming consultants to the school board? They do not participate in decisions. Mm-hmm. Sure, they contribute. But I think a couple of years of observing and participating in a school board is really good training opportunity for potential principals. So that when they come into it, into that role of principal, it's not foreign territory. It's not overwhelming. The proviso is there has to be a protocol around this, that the deputy principal could never contradict the principal during the board meeting, and board members should not place the deputy principal in a circumstance that would lead to contradiction between the two, because that's divisive.
There's some good advice there. Yeah.
Okay, so there has to be an understanding on how that would work, but I think that can be just named and we move on. But I think the value add of our deputy principals coming into board meetings, I have a deputy principal responsible for staffing arrangements, one for director of wellbeing, another one in curriculum. They bring their own skill set and they can add value in their own way. I go to them for advice. Going back to your question, what could potentially newly appointed principals, how could they or might they approach understanding school boards and governance and governing? Colleague principals, regional office, national office, but I'd like to bring it back one step. What if deputy principals, everyone felt comfortable for them to come into the to attend school board meetings, and that way it's training, it's preparing them for potential role of principal.
I think also helping them to understand that difference between governing a school and then putting into practice what needs to happen as a result of that. Because sometimes that can be quite a fine line between what's governance and what's operational.
Correct. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Indeed.
Thank you for all of the information that you've shared today. I really appreciate your words of wisdom. And it's great to hear some insight into what it means to work so closely with your governing body, your school board, and particularly the chair of your board.
No worries. No worries at all.
If you enjoyed this podcast, check out the LEA website, where you'll find more podcasts on a range of topics for anyone interested in leading in Lutheran education.